Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined, of course, by J. Travis Ryer. Be sure to give a like and a subscribe to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Some fantastic content there across the board. A lot of it Alabama related, some SEC related, some neither, but it's all good stuff on Ryer on YouTube. And of course, we are looking ahead to week 2 for the Crimson Tide in this edition of the Talking Tide podcast. Travis, Alabama reeling from a miserable performance in Tallahassee, 2-touchdown loss to the Florida State Seminoles. Looking ahead to a home opener against Louisiana Monroe, and a game that you got to think Alabama cannot wait to play.
Yeah, you know, going into this one, we anticipated one of these teams being 1-0, but I don't think either one of us thought it would be Louisiana Monroe, even with St. Francis, the opponent last week. So maybe we should have expected that for ULM, but it is ULM that comes in as the 1-0 team, not Alabama.
ULM comes in after knocking off St. Francis, which is an FCS program. The final score in that game, 29-0. ULM handled them quite easily. And a quick look at the numbers from that game for ULM, Travis, reveal more than 300 rushing yards for ULM. They really didn't throw the ball a lot. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like about like what Florida State did? So maybe ULM's got to just test that run defense one more time, pitch it out wide, see what happens.
Why would you not? Why would you not test it? You know, it kind of, as you said, I don't think ULM can throw it all that well to begin with. But look, you know, it was St. Francis 300 rushing yards, but you absolutely have to challenge this Alabama run defense to get things going on Saturday night.
I don't know what – I haven't checked the line in 2 days, so maybe it's changed a little bit. But when I saw the open – where the line opened on this game, it was Alabama by 37.5, Travis. What a fat number for a team that's reeling on both sides of the ball. I don't – ULM – you know, look, I understand it's a program that all Alabama ought to beat by a pretty big number, but 37.5 is a big number when you consider what Alabama looked like last week.
Yeah, and this is a ULM program a year ago that started the season 5-1 in 2024 mm-hmm. before dropping 6 straight, unfortunately for the Warhawks and the fine people of Northern Louisiana. But No, I don't think we're in danger of a 2007 repeat. We were both on the sideline at the end of that one in Nick Saban's right. first year. That was rough, wasn't it?
Oh, homecoming.
Oh, jeez. That was the start of a cold November rain, as That's we recall, sure. in 2007. But I guess the thinking is this is obviously a spot where Alabama needs to have four positive quarters of football. So if the opportunity is there, maybe it will, maybe it won't be. This is an Alabama team that needs to see it go through the hoop as many times as possible before you get back into Power Four competition with Wisconsin on deck.
No doubt about it. Alabama, you know, you mentioned, I think, on the Sunday nighter that the fan base has really got to be saying, let's just fast forward to Georgia after that debacle against Florida State. Obviously, if you're the players, you got to, you're looking forward to just getting on the field and playing again against ULM. But if you're the fans, you know this game is not going to show you or teach you anything about this team. It's just no. it's, unless it's bad, you might get some more bad news about this Alabama team, but you're not going to get any. You're not going to learn anything certain that's positive coming out of this game.
Any true news, really the next couple of games potentially, is probably going to be bad news. If there's any news for Alabama, especially this week, and unfortunately there's been more bad news as we just learned, I know this evening with Jeremiah Beeman, the promising young defensive lineman. You already had the situation with Tim Keenan on the interior there, so I'm sure we'll get into more of that coming up here in just a little bit. But absolutely. And hey, look, the good thing for the Alabama defense, though, is you don't have to wait around for games like Louisiana Monroe to get on the field. Hell, you'll get on the field three deep in the first quarter against Florida State in the season opener. So yeah, I think, though, for Alabama, obviously, continuing to kind of ramp up some guys, and still it feels like this team's still trying to figure out who it has and exactly who it is on both sides of the ball.
23 defensive players saw action against Florida State. 19 of those 23 got 15 or more snaps.
Yeah.
So tons of substitutions, no question about it. Alabama will be down to a third stringer at that inside defensive line position because Tim Keenan will be out until Wisconsin at least. So he'll miss this one. Jeremiah Beeman out for the year per Kalen DeBoer on his radio show just a little while ago. So, yeah, maybe London Simmons, maybe Faga. It's going to be an interesting scene down there on the interior of the defensive line.
And I think those guys accounted for themselves about as well as they could against Florida State, but they're not at that point yet. So if you're thinking ahead to Georgia, especially, you really got to – I wouldn't even risk Keenan against Wisconsin. If I can't beat Wisconsin without Tim Keenan at home, because now without Beeman, it puts even more of a heightened importance on Keenan being there against a Georgia team that, you know, Georgia, after seeing the Florida State tape, doesn't have a problem trying to run the football as it is. So you've got to have Keenan. And I'm a little bit skeptical about that for a return date because, you know, Tate Ratledge was an offensive lineman, speaking of Georgia, a year ago, had the tightrope type surgery on an ankle injury. It was pretty much a 6-week type thing for him. Six weeks plus. A big guy, an interior offensive lineman, not a defensive lineman. So, boy, if you have Keenan back for Georgia, even if you have him back, I'm still left to wonder what the pitch count's going to look like.
Right, right. Yeah, that tightrope surgery essentially solves the high ankle sprain. And we've seen, I think, the first time I ever heard of that surgery being performed on any football player was Tua. Remember, he was, I'm sure it had happened before, but the first time I'd ever heard about it, certainly on an Alabama guy, was Tua Tagovailoa had that procedure. And, you know, it varies. It's kind of like a meniscus in that way. Like you said, with Ratledge, that was a 6-week deal. Sometimes it's two or three. If I recall correctly, Tua came back quite a bit sooner than 6 weeks off of his, but you never know. And like you said, when Keenan gets back, it'll be, is he 100%? And beyond that, as we know, Travis, anything, any injury knees or below is going to be tougher on somebody who weighs 320 like a Tim Keenan than it will be a skill guy.
And this isn't a scheme. If you were still two gapping, might not be as much of a problem. You're asking guys in this scheme to be disruptive types.
Right.
And so that's what you're not sure of. But yeah, I'm with you. The cynicism for this fan base right now is understandably at a previous era high. You'd have to go back to, well, you'd have to go back to Mike Shula. And, you know, these next couple of 3 weeks are going to kind of determine, is this just a full on revenge tour for opponents where Alabama is concerned? Because look, Georgia still got plenty of pent up angst where Alabama is concerned. No doubt about that. Right. South Carolina. Hey, Mike Shula is your offensive coordinator at South Carolina. How about Mike? You think he wants a little bit of the alma mater?
He'd love it. And you know, South Carolina thinks they should have won at Bryant Denny last year. That game was tight.
They got a little payback, they think. Missouri would love to get some of Alabama and Como. Mm-hmm. So that's what's got to sort of start to change. And we talk about what can Bama really prove against an opponent like ULM. Well, not much in terms of other than it being a negative experience if it comes down to it. Alabama wins the game 56-7. Fans are going to say, well, there you go. That's what they were supposed to do. Check back in maybe a little bit more with Wisconsin. But Georgia is that next mile marker for most of the Alabama fans, right?
No doubt. It'd be the first SEC game of the season and a big one, and one that Georgia is absolutely going to want in a big way on the road for the Crimson Tide. That one over in Athens. Big, big challenge. Speaking of Georgia and the Georgia Alabama series, in the wake of Ryan Williams' less than stellar performance against Florida State, Travis, one of the notes that came out, and I didn't even realize this until I saw it, but the last time Ryan Williams had 100 yards receiving in a game was Georgia last year. 10 straight games now under 100 yards for the star sophomore from Saraland.
Yeah, it's an interesting stat. I will say this. I tweeted something like this a couple days ago. He drew a couple of PI holds last Saturday that if the FSU defenders don't hold in PI, those may have very well gone for touchdowns. And that stat line would have looked a lot different. So I give him credit for impacting that. I give Florida State's defenders credit on those plays. They didn't give up the touchdowns. They made Alabama earn it. And guess what? I think Alabama came out of those two penalties in plus territory with just 3 points instead of 14. So do the math on that. And also, he still creates a lot of space for guys like Jeremy Bernard. Jeremy was great, no doubt about that. But I know you do your film work and look at things like that, and there's still no question that Ryan, even in a game where he only has 30 receiving yards, something like that, he can still impact. What you'd like to see is it show up more in the run game. And to do that, though, you got to keep trying to push the ball to him and create explosive plays with him, because that's going to back some people up. And then if they are going to overplay that run game, you got to hit them on that play action.
As we've talked about throughout fall camp in August, Travis, lots of slot action for Ryan Williams. He didn't play much slot at all as a freshman in 2024. He was in the slot for almost all of his snaps against Florida State. So it'll be interesting to see if he ends up really kind of being the full-time guy there, or if we're going to see him out wide maybe a little bit more often.
Well, the way that game played out Saturday, I'll give you a scenario and you tell me what you think. Ryan Williams more outside, Jeremy Bernard more at kind of that flanker spot, the Z, and Rico Scott inside.
Yeah.
And Isaiah Horton becomes the four.
Right. Yeah.
Is that all that far fetched to you? I mean,
I don't think so.
Game.
I don't think so. I've touched on this before. Isaiah didn't like to block too good. And you know,
That ain't gonna work with Shep, or it shouldn't.
It shouldn't. And it makes you think, you know, where's Kendrick Law when you need him, right? Because if somebody's not gonna be a dynamic receiver downfield and getting a ton of production, look, it's one game for Isaiah Horton. Maybe he lights it up as a pass catcher this year. Maybe he doesn't. But you knew Kendrick Law, even though Kendrick Law wasn't great at getting open necessarily and making huge plays, the guy was going to work his ass off as a blocker. And among all the myriad of problems that we saw with Alabama on both sides of the ball against Florida State, blocking was just another issue.
Well,
another problem.
The new Kendrick Law is Jalen Mbakwe. I mean, he's kind of positionless a little bit right now. Kendrick Law, that was sort of him, right? But can you incorporate maybe Mbakwe into this offense in ways that you at least use Kendrick Law? I don't know if Bach is the blocker, though, that Kendrick Law was an elite blocker. I'll tell you somebody else from last year that was good that way that's no longer with Alabama. Emmanuel Henderson was a good guy down the field. He's now at Kansas. So you've had a pretty dynamic shift. I think in a lot of ways you expected that room to be upgraded in the way of playmaking ability. But if it isn't going to get better than what Isaiah Horton put on tape against Florida State, understanding he apparently was injured. But then we hear Kalen today talk about Isaiah Horton like he's great. Yeah. You know, like he's not limited and good to go. So I have a hard time giving him a pass from that perspective.
There are a couple of habits with Horton that you don't necessarily like that don't have anything to do with an injury. And I'm talking about on field habits. I'm not talking about off field. But Wolf.
And he's not alone that way. There's a lot of receivers. If the ball isn't coming to him,
right?
Check back with me when it is.
Makes it hard if you're Ty Simpson, right?
Yeah, you would think so.
So, all right, Travis, want to tell our viewers and listeners really quickly about Parker Covers Alabama, nonprofit organization 501c3 that's been created in honor of Mike Parker, a friend of mine, a friend of Travis's for quite a long time, passed away in February, wheelchair bound for 20 plus years. Parker Covers Alabama, which you can get to at parkercoversalabama.com, is going to support and assist wheelchaired residents throughout the state of Alabama. Really looking forward to getting this thing off the ground.
Just a great, great thing that you and Cope have come up with to honor just a unique individual, a one of a kind in Mike Parker, who, given the tragic events surrounding his situation, especially at the time in his life when he encountered that situation, right, to go on and live as inspiringly and just to the fullest as Mike did. There's just, you know, it's unicornish. I don't know a better way to put it. And so that's the impact Mike Parker had on pretty much everyone he encountered. And so to see this come together like it is, kudos to you and Cope. And, not a day goes by really that you don't think about Mike. You don't think about his great parents, his family, just as good a people as you'll ever meet.
No doubt about it. ParkerCoversAlabama.com. Check it out and support it if you can. Travis, moving on, we continue this look at Alabama ULM. And I think the offensive line, probably something we ought to touch on as well. That was certainly up and down at best against Florida State. We saw a running game that basically disappeared. We saw pass protection that was up and down, I thought, at best. Sometimes Ty Simpson held the ball too long. Sometimes he didn't make the greatest of decisions. But I thought Parker Brailsford probably played the best of anyone on that offensive line against the Seminoles. You'd expect that, I guess, of a veteran and a team captain and a guy who knows the DeBoer / Grubb offensive system inside and out. Not as good elsewhere on the line, but the good news, I guess, against ULM, Travis, is that it appears that Jaden Roberts is going to be back in the lineup for week 2, and that's certainly good news for the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, and we'll see how that sort of impacts that group, what that looks like, if in fact that is the case. You know, a lot of people getting on Kalen DeBoer, and I get it, rightfully so, after that performance last Saturday. But, you know, when you think about it, Chase, thank goodness for the guys he brought with him from Washington. Think about game Saturday. If Josh Cuevas isn't on this team, or Jeremy Bernard isn't on this team, or Parker Brailsford isn't on this team, what's your damn offense?
Right.
If those three guys don't come, we can talk a lot about some other transfers, and we already have tonight.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of some whiffing it already smells like in the transfer front for Courtney Morgan and Kalen DeBoer. But the Washington guys have been damn good at least, right?
No doubt. Bernard was phenomenal. You like that guy the more you see him, no question about it. Big season for Alabama last year. They call him Unk in that wide receiver room, Travis, because he's the veteran. He's playing for his third Power Four program now, right? Because he had been at Washington, had been at Michigan State prior to that. So he's been around. He's reliable. He will block, by the way. Mm-hmm. He gets after it in every respect. A lot of praise for him coming from Ryan Grubb out of that press conference on Monday as well. So definitely a bright spot. And you're absolutely right. The Washington transfers are playing better than the Washington coaches are coaching.
It might have got shut out Saturday if they didn't have the Washington guys. You know, think about that offensive line without Brailsford. Mm-hmm. Think about that wide receiver situation without Jeremy Bernard and Cuevas. You know, had a couple of big plays in the game. So, we'll see if the offensive line's an interesting topic, because I was thinking about this today. And again, thank goodness for Brailsford, because if you talk about year to year for Alabama offensive lines, really going back to about 08 with Andre Smith and how they started to transition every year into the next group. You always had that one guy on an Alabama offensive line. Some years you had multiples, but you knew you were going to have that one guy every year that was the guy. And it's a good thing Parker Brailsford's around, because when you look at the other four right now, it's pretty serviceable at best. Yeah. It's not to the standard that you would expect Alabama to have or has had for over the last 15, 17 years.
No, 80% is not good enough as a grade for those guys, because if you're 80%, then that means one guy is screwing up every play, right?
Yeah.
And you can't have that, because what they say about the offensive line, it's only as strong as the weakest link, to pull out of a terribly overused cliche.
This offensive line feels like third guys in previous years, like a third guard, you know what I mean? Like, or a third tackle. But these are the guys that are, frontline guys for this offensive line. Maybe they'll get it going. And the dynamic between Grubb and Kapilovic, right? I mean, you had Scott Huff and Ryan Grubb together at Washington. Duos like that matter on the offensive side of the ball. And it's not to suggest that Ryan Grubb may be absolutely thrilled with the work that Chris Kapilovic is doing with that group. But typically that's what you'll see. You'll see, like when Sark came to Alabama and he brought his guy, his offensive line coach. Bill O'Brien came, he brought initially Doug Marrone. That's kind of how they travel together. And this time it really hasn't worked that way with that duo.
Getting away from the on-field preview of this ULM game, Travis, before we get out of here, let's touch on some of the off-field grumblings that we've heard. Some reporting today about grousing among boosters regarding the Kalen DeBoer buyout. It's well north of $60 million right now. I think it'll drop at the end of the season at some point. That talk is a little premature for me, but it doesn't shock me that it's happening.
Well, it's low-hanging fruit after a performance like last Saturday. I mean, what the hell kind of response do you think?
Yeah.
You could pull over two or three Alabama supporters, anywhere in the state of Alabama this week and say, hey, what do you think about Saturday? Or what do you think about the state of the program? And that writes itself. You know, that's nothing earth shattering or shocking about grousing and grumbling among the higher levels of, you know. And if you're Yay Alabama or you're Greg Byrne, you're like, well, great, write a bigger check. But that's the thing. And I heard comments that were attributed to AJ McCarron about Alabama's NIL being lower than a lot of places. Right now, anyway, I don't think that's a problem for Alabama. I look at Alabama's roster and I still see plenty of talent. So it's not an NIL deficit thing. Not yet. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem becomes the further you're removed from all the success that you experienced since 2008, and it starts to show up maybe in the form of fewer NFL draft picks or guys right. picked earlier in the NFL draft, that's when you could have a roster / NIL problem. You're right. still getting some carry out of being Bama and being relevant to the NFL draft. And the more importantly, the first round of the right. NFL draft. But you put a couple of three of these, check back with me in a year or two about Alabama's NIL situation. Not saying what AJ said isn't actually what's happening. I'm just saying right now, it's not a big deal, but it certainly could become one.
There are problems on the field that can be identified from last week's game that don't have anything to do with NIL, right? Whether it's penalties, discipline, mental errors, et cetera.
Yep.
None of that has anything to do
with resiliency.
So you go up and down the line. But you're right. Over the course of time, it's going to do some damage to the talent base as well if they don't get this thing turned around. Also, in the news today, Travis, I thought this was especially interesting given the outcome in Tallahassee. It would appear that some of the season tickets that Alabama has revoked because they've been flagged for being dumped on the secondary market, as it's called, air quotes, you like those, have basically just gone to a different secondary market that is then turning around and feeding scalper profits straight back to the school.
Just to another ticket man. We like to talk about the ticket man. So the ticket man initially kind of looked like this, but now they just put a mustache on the new ticket man. He's basically the same ticket man.
Yeah.
Doing the same work. Yeah. That's under the when it rains, it pours sort of umbrella of what's been going on here in the last week. It really is that way. I mean, we've seen it in other eras, you and I both, that boy, this one begat that one begat that one, like Doyle Hargreaves.
It was not the greatest thing for UA for that story to come out today. Yeah. No question about it. The timing was not great for the Crimson Tide.
It feels like Alabama's having a Florida State week and Florida State's having an Alabama week. This is the way teams used to feel after Alabama. Now Alabama's feeling like those teams after Florida State.
Remember in 2008 when all those coaches that got beat by Alabama got fired at the end of the season or even midseason, and people were dropping those red X's on the mugshots left and right. You know,
that's a discussion for further down the line, but you get the sense this is a staff that Kalen really likes and they like each other, but boy, if this doesn't change here in the next month and a half, barring something totally the bottom falling out, it's hard because of the buyout and things like that for me to imagine Kalen DeBoer not being at Alabama if he wants to be in 2026. And he's not going to just walk away, you wouldn't think. Who knows? Maybe something else works out. I don't know. Yeah. But it would surprise me just as much or more if it doesn't have a real different look to it, if this kind of revenge tour potential scenario plays out on the field.
It is something. All right, Travis, that is going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast right here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to give Ryer on YouTube a like and a subscribe, a follow. Check it out. Lots of fantastic content there, Travis. And you and I will be teeing it up once again for the Sunday Nighter in the wake of this week two game for Alabama.
Yeah, if that show takes more than 20 minutes, then probably means not a lot of good came out of that week two matchup.
In and out, no doubt about it. We're in and out right now. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodred of the Tuscaloosa News. We will catch you next time right here on Talking Tide.
Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save.